Good evening and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, April 19th, 2009. It is now 8.01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. You can email us anytime at comments@libertytalkradio.com. Now, I encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com, mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two. In his weekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on contraryinvestorscafe.com. Lastly, I would like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good evening, everyone. This evening, we have a treat. We have a candidate running for U.S. Congress, State of Oklahoma, 4th Congressional District. He's considered, R.J. Harris, is considered a constitutional conservative or Ron Paul Republican, and he's running against Tom Cole in the 4th Congressional District. We are going to interview him this evening to see what he has to say. We need more people like him because he is, in fact, a freedom fighter and looks at the Constitution a little bit more seriously than most people do, especially most politicians. And are we lucky to have someone like R.J. Harris running for office? And maybe he can inspire some of us who usually don't vote to get out and vote for someone who will preserve the Constitution. What we need to understand, folks, is that people who are trying to defend the Constitution are in the minority. But we are growing, and it's a very painful process. Each one of us makes a difference. And each day that goes by, people are realizing that there is something radically wrong. And here we are right now. I believe he's on the line. Let's see if he's here. Mr. Harris.
Hi. How are you doing?
Fine. Thank you, Mr. Harris. And thank you so much for being part of our program this evening. We consider it an honor to have you on our show.
Well, I'm honored to be here, Joe. I really appreciate you having me on tonight.
Thank you. Well, let's see. You are running against Tom Cole, 4th Congressional District, State of Oklahoma. You are a constitutional conservative and a Ron Paul Republican.
That's correct.
Wow. Now, you know, the question that I ask most people who are running for office is sort of an open focus question, you know. First of all, how did you get to where you are now that you decided to run for office, do something as grueling as run for office? And what tactics or strategy do you have to hopefully ensure that you have a chance of winning, being a constitutional conservative, which puts you in the back of the room, typically in the eyes of most voters? And I'll let you go with that. And by the way, you may introduce yourself or add anything that you'd like to add.
Well, Joe, it's an 18-year journey. It started when I joined the Army National Guard. and when I swore an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States with my very life if necessary. And like I said, I've been in the Guard for 18 years, and I'm still serving in the Guard.
Okay.
So that, I mean, that's how far back the answer to that question begins, but I'll just begin it there, but I won't take everybody through that long diatribe there. But, you know, basically what it comes down to is, For that long period of time, I was, you know, your typical American Republican, expecting that his elder statesmen, betters, whatever you want to call them, were taking care of our government, doing their job. Probably wasn't always happy with what I saw, but was counting on the Republican Party to do their job politically while I was out doing my job as a soldier. However, as I became more studied in the Constitution and became more educated, went back to college, I started learning about a great many things that our government and our Congress was up to that are definitely not in line, and sometimes even outside of the Constitution, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so I began a search last year for a candidate that I could support for president, and lo and behold, that candidate was Ron Paul.
Right.
He lived his principles and his values and voted them consistently for 20 years in the United States Congress, and when I saw that, out of the entire field of candidates, I found that constitutional conservative that I was looking for, and that's what got me into politics, if you will. I became a Republican Party activist. I started volunteering with my Cleveland County chairman and helping him out, and fortunately, our county chairman was not one of these big anti-Ron Paul Republican types. He was just a fair gentleman. His name is Roger Warren, and he was just very fair to everyone and inclusive. And so myself and a whole bunch of other constitutional conservatives in the Norman Moore area, we came to his aid and helped him do things and, you know, went through the whole primary season last year and did what we could to get delegates elected, constitutional conservative delegates elected. And that's what kind of woke me up to this whole process, this whole political process that we have here in the state and in the country, and to see both the goods and the bads in it, the positives and the negatives. And then came the financial crisis and the bailout. Like I said, at another time of my life, it might have gotten past me. I might have missed it. But at this particular time, I was very aware of what was going on with our leadership and in Congress. We faced an unprecedented financial crisis that had been brewing. If you heard anything from Ron Paul, you know that it's been brewing for decades. But it finally came to a head last fall. And, you know, faced with a vote for socialism or slavery, unfortunately, the majority of Congress persons were on the wrong side of the vote, and as was about 90 or so, or if not more, Republicans, which I'm ashamed to have to say about my party, that they would do that. They should know better. They have championed themselves as being, small government and conservative, and they're the closest thing that we even have to constitutional conservatives outside of the Libertarian Party, I'd say, but they didn't show it that day. And I called my county chairman, Roger Warren, and I was very upset. And I asked him, I said, Roger, what are we going to do about this? Our representative voted for this nonsense. And he just said to him, and he's an older gentleman, you know, and he's kind of been through the blackberry patch and had to put up with all this before. And his response to me was, no, RJ, what are you going to do about it? And that just kind of hit me.
Oh, that's that is profound.
And that's what began that long decision, that when he said that, I got off the phone with him. I started getting with all the Ron Paul Republicans and some friends that we had made with the Huckabee Republicans and constitutional conservatives, and even some, you know, we have some libertarians that are also in the Republican Party, but we also have some libertarians in the Libertarian Party that support us. And I just started talking to all of them, and they all loved the idea that somebody would try to hold a bailout voter's feet to the fire and hold them accountable for what they've done and for that vote for socialism. And so the response that we got back was very, very positive. So I went ahead and made the decision, got involved in the race. I've had lots of volunteers come out and help me. I've had some amazing help on my website from my my campaign manager, Jonathan, and Jonathan Gibbons. And as, and I'm sure you've had a chance to check out my website, rjharris2010.com.
Yes.
It's just a beautiful site.
Right.
Where we're able to get our issues out there on all of these different, our positions out here on all these different issues of the day. And I don't just give the folks just some canned little position on these issues where I can dance around and not be nailed down. I don't mind being nailed down on an issue because every single one of my positions is founded on the bedrock of the Constitution. And so I don't mind being nailed down on those issues. There's no worry there for that.
Okay. Do you consider yourself a libertarian Republican?
I would consider myself, I guess if you were going to put a label on it, you could say that, but first and foremost, I consider myself a constitutional conservative.
Okay. All righty. We'll get that back to that in a second, because I do have some questions, and hopefully some of our listeners will have some questions. And our number is 646-652-4620. Folks, we know you're out there. Don't be bashful. Please call in. 646-652-4620. It is our pleasure to have Mr. R.J. Harris running the Republican candidate for U.S. Congress, District 4, State of Oklahoma. Now, tell us something about Tom Cole that you're running against.
Well, Tom Cole, from what I understand, was elected in 2003. Might be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure that's when it was. And for all intents and purposes, as far as our research shows, he was your, you know, typical Republican representative. You know, his voting record was definitely not stellar as it applies to constitutional issues. I think one of the groups that we follow here given him about like a 50% rating on his constitutional voting.
Okay.
Up until that point. But really, all that stuff is kind of water under the bridge. Even if it was bad, and right or wrong, what brought it to a head for me was his vote for that bailout. Because I look at bailouts. I look at socialism, which is the forcible transfer of people's wealth.
Okay.
That they've earned from one group of people to another group of people, whoever that is wrong. It's theft. And, you know, faced with a nearly $1 trillion decision to make, Tom Cole voted for that bailout. He voted to transfer our hard-earned wealth and resources to some of the wealthiest Americans in the country. They had made a lot of very poor decisions, a lot of very poor business decisions, which would have required some of them to go out of business, which is the fair and equitable way for things to happen in a free market, in a free market capitalist economy. And instead of allowing that natural thing to happen, Tom Cole voted to try to jerry-rig that process and change it. And as did every other congressman in the state, except for Frank Lucas. So, unfortunately, I had to look at my district. I can't really deal with the other districts right now, although we're trying to. We're trying to attract other candidates to challenge every single bailout voter. But in my district, that's what did it for me. And then, you know, shortly thereafter, you know, as if voting for socialism through forced labor and forced servitude wasn't, or forced labor and control of people's wealth wasn't enough, then he turned around and voted for the Obama's Give Act, which has these archaic mandatory, quote unquote, mandatory voluntary services commitments in there, which no matter how you read it, comes out to the very definition of involuntary servitude. So you've got a guy who's just got this, you know, propensity to vote for these unconstitutional bills. You know, the worst of which are these votes for socialism and votes for slavery.
Right. Well, now, how do you... I'm on board with what you're saying, right? And if I was in the 4th Congressional District, you know, I would vote for you. I can tell you that right now, because I agree with what you are saying, and I know no one, very few people are really saying that. And I'm glad to hear that Ron Paul was an inspiration to you, because I think he was an inspiration to all of us. And that keeps a very, very difficult uphill fight, you know, giving it further momentum and getting people involved. And I'm very, very pleased to hear that. Now, the question that I have, and I believe it or not, I've been in your shoes, unfortunately, you know, running for office many years ago. But how do you translate this passion for defending the Constitution, which is the right thing that we should be doing, against the forces of an ignorant populace who does not understand the Constitution any longer because it's not taught in our schools, doesn't understand the concept of separation of powers, I mean, doesn't understand their civic duties and responsibilities and what the government restrictions on government should be? How do you translate that? Because if you speak to people, they'll sort of agree with you, but they'll say, well, you're a fringe guy. You know, you're not part of the group. And how are you going to translate your passion for freedom, liberty, the Constitution, constitutional rights, to the populace so that they would come out in droves voting for you?
Well, fortunately, Joe, we're at a moment in our history that we have not seen since 1775. This past week, we had the general population coming out in numbers unseen before to stand up and make a very bold and aggressive statement about their current disposition, their current feelings about our government and what our government's been up to. And this just didn't happen in a vacuum. This was brought on by people like yourself. This was brought on by people like Ron Paul, who have been trying to talk about this stuff for the last 20, 30, 40 years or more. And it was a slow, slow process, as was this incremental socialism that's been fed to us one small bite at a time until it reached this critical mass this last year. And so what I see happening is these folks are waking up. And right as they wake up, they don't know who to trust because they haven't been politically involved.
Right.
They don't really, like you say, they're you know, kind of iffy on what the Constitution actually says. But if they're like me and they're like a lot of the other Ron Paul people that got in this last election cycle and got active, one of the very first things they started doing, if they were going to start talking about the Constitution to their friends around the water cooler, was to read the thing a little bit more thoroughly.
Right.
And I think what we're going to see happen out of this nationwide movement, which I don't see certain people in the media letting up on. I mean, I've heard some people say to me, hey, yeah, we had these Tea Party protests on Wednesday, but those people are just going to go home and forget out about it. I totally think that's off the mark. Because there are certain media personalities that have stepped forward and have made this their rallying cry. I don't see them letting these people go home. And as an added side bonus, now that the folks are waking up and they start going on the internet, they start reading their constitutions, they start finding out what a Federal Reserve is, and they start finding out, you know, the illegal ways in which they're being taxed, and start finding out how when their grandchildren are taxed before they're even born due to deficit spending, that is the very definition of taxation without representation. Those people haven't even had a chance to vote yet, and they're already being taxed.
Well, they're not even born yet, and they're taxed, right.
That's right. And so I know this is a big answer to your question, but the answer to your question, how do we transform, you know, my constitutional conservative principles and values and positions to a more broad-based support for a candidacy not just like mine, because, and I'll get back to that in a minute, I'll go ahead and make this comment, victory isn't just electing R.J. Harris in the 4th District, but I'll come back to that. So how do we transfer that? Well, we get out in front of this awakening, of this grassroots awakening, and let folks know who we are contrasted to what they're used to dealing with, what they're used to putting up with. With the doublespeak that they're used to hearing from politicians. And the reason why you get that doublespeak from your traditional politician is because they're not taking positions on the Constitution. And when you take a position that's not on the Constitution, well, then you have to kind of dance around out here in the ether for this group of people, and then when you try to go over and please this other group of people, you have to dance around in this other little area, and so that's where that comes from. But when you have a constitutional conservative candidate who is going to stand firmly upon the bedrock of the Constitution, he can only lean, or she can only lean, you know, a little bit before he falls over, or a little bit to the right before he falls over. You cannot sway too far off of that. You can't sway off of it at all.
Right.
If you're really going to be, and so that way, we will be able to present not only me, but other constitutional conservative candidates who are going to challenge these bailout voters, and give an answer to the rallying cry at Oklahoma City Tea Party. The largest cry, the chant that they could hear all the way into the rotunda was vote them out, vote them out.
Right.
Well, we give them candidates that we can show are just philosophically and principally different than what they're used to dealing with. Candidates that will swear an oath not to solicit money from lobbyists. Candidates that will stake their sacred honor on their support for the Constitution. People will see that and immediately know that, hey, that's different than what we've seen before. We have not seen that before. Let's look at that. And I think that right there is how we're going to turn a whole bunch of broad-based, impetuous, behind not just me, but a lot of other candidates. They're going to step forward from amongst the ranks of the people to try to hold these bailout voters accountable.
All right, now, Tom Cole is a Republican.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, you're running him again in the primary. Now, running against the incumbent is difficult at best because, as you know, 95% of the incumbents always wind up getting back into office. Now, and that's because people, once a Republican, always a Republican, once a Democrat, always a Democrat, and they follow the party line. Saying what you're saying to the older people, the people over 50 years old, who are more apt to vote than people who are younger these days for some reason. But these people are unlikely to refamiliarize themselves with the Constitution, in my opinion. It just seems like that's a really tough battle to fight. What demographics are you looking at to give yourself a fighting chance?
We're looking at a demographic, really, that's just all American. We're looking at a broad base here, from college students all the way up to folks that have that are aging. It doesn't matter. The Constitution is something that 75% of us agreed on in 1787 and 89. It was when it went through the ratification process. It is something that if you ask anybody and say, hey, when your rights are trampled upon and you demand to have your day before the Supreme Court, what are they going to be ruling on? It's the Constitution. So the Constitution is something that we all come together on. It's one of the last bastions that we have where at least 75% of us or more can come together in agreement. And I don't think that's something that's just age-based. We have messages that we have flyers that we're going to be distributing. By the way, I'm an OU student. I'm a law student at OU.
Okay.
And so I spend a lot of time at the OU campus, and we're going to be distributing flyers up there. And on the back, it has a message specifically directed at students, at what this out-of-control unconstitutional monetary policy we have is going to do to them, and what this horrible lack of fiscal responsibility from our Congress is going to do to them. And to answer the question more directly, there are different demographic groups as the age, throughout the age groups, they have different things that are important to them, but all of those things have a constitutional basis in a way to explain the issue. That when you bring it back to, like I said, the bedrock of that Constitution, you can say, hey, look, this is our common ground. This is where we have to come together. And so I hear what you're saying. You're saying maybe the older crowd might not be as inclined to come back to the Constitution. I might have to take a little bit of issue with you on that, because I think that what we're seeing right now is unprecedented. I mean, last Tea Party we had, 1770s. Next Tea Party we have, 2009. When people want to get up and start talking about this stuff, they quickly realize they want to be able to at least articulate a little bit of what they mean. The Constitution's only 4 pages long.
Right.
It won't take that much effort to read it.
Right. Well, isn't your job easier? I mean, don't you believe that your message resonates with young people, college students, you know, even non-college students, but people who think for a living? You can receive, you'll probably get a good portion of their vote if they decide to vote.
I guess where
I always see an obstacle, and I'm not picking on you, RJ, believe me, I'm not picking on you at all. I'm just saying that it's just been my experience that, like in my neighborhood, I'm a middle-class neighborhood type place, and I've been to like Christmas parties where, you know, people in the neighborhood are there that I've never seen before, or I haven't seen in a long time, and I tell you, they don't sound like you at all. They don't sound like me at all. To them, you know, if another country does something we don't like and we nuke them, that's well within the Constitution. I mean, they believe that. That's my problem, is that their interpretation of the Constitution is way off base. You and I recognize that, but they don't think they're doing anything wrong, and their man is really doing the right thing, even though he's violating every tenet of the Constitution. How are you campaigning, and what tactics are you using to overcome that? And those people who are more likely to vote for you, how are you trying to reach them so that they know you're running and they'll run to the polls, just like people ran to the polls to vote for Ron Paul? I mean, I was a registered independent, and I registered as a Republican so I can vote for Ron Paul. I mean, I went through some effort to do that. And what tactics are you using? How are you going to reach these people?
Well, I think in the past, I think, and when I say past, I mean the very recent past, prior to this last 6 month period that we're in, things are changing right now at warp speed. The Ron Paul Republicans, as I like to think of us, we went through this awakening process last year, and now we're about to watch a much larger and a much broader base of the population go through what we went through last year, as we listened to the message that he was speaking and started to research things that he said and started to find out those things for ourselves. We're about to watch a very large segment of our population go through that process. So even if what you were saying is correct about folks still right now, where they have this traditional propensity of bravado as it comes to foreign policy or not quite a full comprehension of the Constitution, regardless of what age group they're in. We're about to watch those folks, as they wake up, go through the same type of transformation we all, and I know you had gone through it a long time ago, but a lot of us new Ron Paul Republicans just woke up to a lot of this stuff within
right.
the last 3 years. And we're going to watch that happen. And our methods to reach out to those folks as they come into the fold, as they go to a tea party and voice their anger and then go home and get on the internet to try to find out what they can do, right? Our effort to reach out to them is, first of all, the internet. We're using that internet. We've got our website up. We've got Facebook, MySpace sites up. We've got social networking sites up on meetup.com. We've got our meetup groups out there where we can capture people that are out there. They've been woke up, and now they're trying to find out what's next. So we're trying to get our message out that way. We're going to have, we've already started to have radio ads up where we talk about my position on the issues. And you only got 30 seconds or 60 seconds.
Right.
But we just throw it out there. We throw that issue out there. We direct people to the website where they can go and hear more. We have tailored constitutional messages for the different age groups and the different things that are going to be important to them, but constitutionally based. The other thing we need to do is, and I know this sounds quite cliched, but it's not, because we've only got a handful of politicians willing to do it. We got to live our principles and our values in the way that we just live every day, in the way that we will refuse to be pulled off of a position for expediency's sake.
Right.
For example, when I went in to cut the radio ad that I just recently had up over the last 2 weeks to get ready for the convention that happened on Saturday, which we can get to that later, I went in there, and the sound engineer that was cutting the ad, I had my ad all ready to go, and I said it, and it came out in 30 seconds perfect the first time, and she turned to me, and she said, you know, very politely, she said to me, she said, hey, she goes, if you don't mind me saying, I think you did really good at saying what you had to say, but I don't know if we'll be too agreeing, you know, I don't think we'll be too eye-to-eye politically, but I think you just did a great job cutting that ad. And I said, well, that's okay, you know, we don't have to agree on everything, and I was just kind of trying to see where she was going to be.
Right.
And then she let me know, well, she told me about this experience that she had with this person in the elevator who was really just, you know, railing at her about different conservative principles, and as she was in her private reprieve in the elevator. And I let her know, I said, hey, you know, there's a time and place for political discourse. And,
right.
And you know, so I just let her develop what she had to say, and I didn't just ram everything at her. And lo and behold, if she didn't finally just open up on me and say, hey, well, explain this socialism as slavery deal a little bit. She goes, I think you're tripping me up there. And I said, well, both of those things are attempting to control your labor through force. I said, you know, and as I began to explain that, you could see her eyes opening up. And then she said, well, maybe what's tripping me up there is slavery is always bad, no matter what. But socialism, if you have it in small moderation or whatever, it can be good. And, of course, she relates this to her son. She had a special needs son. And,
right.
You know, so they're kind of reliant upon having good schools out there that will be able to work well with special needs students and so
right.
forth. And so I said, well, let me respond by saying, well, when I said that's the real insidious thing about socialism is when you're a slave, when you're up there on the block, you're being sold to the plantation, you know that you're a slave. But with socialism, they've made us all slaves. And we didn't even see it coming.
Right.
We didn't even know it was happening. I said, so that's the... And when I put it to her like that, when I said that, that was it. She woke up right there. She stopped disagreeing with me. She said, wow, you know. And so we allow people to have their say in the discourse, but at the same time, we as constitutional conservatives just simply refuse to be pulled off of that Constitution.
Right.
And instead of shouting back at them or anything like that, we explain the Constitution. We explain why it is the way it is. And we explain why it's written the way it is and how they can apply that to them. For example, it's not wrong that we have schools for her child, for her special needs child. Constitutionally, what's wrong, and I explained this to her too, I said, what's wrong is for us to demand people in Florida to pay for our children in Oklahoma.
That's right.
That's wrong. That's morally wrong. We in Oklahoma can decide what kind of government we're going to have. And our founders were so wise, and they knew that the free market was so critical to our freedom, that not only did they protect that free market and as the preamble to the Constitution say, in the preamble it says that we provide for the common defense, but that we promote
the general welfare. Welfare. Yeah.
Okay. And so they promote the general welfare by protecting that free market. Big difference between promote and provide. And
that's
I
right.
said, so
okay.
What's wrong with that is when we try to demand the people in California pay for our needs, that's wrong. I said, there's no constitutional basis for that. There's nothing in the Constitution that allows the federal government to do that. If we have issues at our state's level, we need to decide. And our founders gave us 13 choices for governments. They didn't just give us a free market, they even gave us a free market for government. And that's blossomed into 50 choices for governments. And when I said that to her, I said, now, so, but by the end of my conversation, she had gone from being someone that said, wow, you know, I don't know if we're going to see eye to eye politically, to being someone that said that could agree with me politically. And why? Because the entire discussion was based off of the Constitution and a light discussion on what the functions of government are supposed to be and what they're allowed to be, and the different levels of government, where they're supposed to operate, where they have been operating and when they haven't been operating. And I think I got a voter that day.
Okay.
And so I hope that answers the question as right. to what our tactics are.
Yeah. Well, I suspect that your campaign manager is attempting to get you in front of the Kiwanis Club and the Rotary Clubs and stuff like that. Is that part of your tactics of getting in front of the people?
That's another thing we're doing, is we're going out to speak to the different social networking groups, the more traditional ones. Obviously, I mentioned the internet, but we also have our traditional ones, Rotary Club, Kiwanis Club, which we have not yet approached them, but I'm sure we either will approach them or be approached by them. We have spoke to the Frontier Republican Women's Club. We've spoken to the Cleveland County Republican Women's Club.
Let me stop you there. First of all, just let me interrupt you just for a second. Folks, this is Joe Cristiano. I'm your host for Liberty Talk Radio. You're listening to Mr. R.J. Harris, Republican candidate for U.S. Congress, District 4, State of Oklahoma. Our call-in number is 646-652-4620. 646-652-4620. We haven't had any callers. Don't let me come out there and get you guys and dial the phone for you. Please dial the phone and call in with your questions. RJ, here's a question for you. When you spoke to you said the Women's Republican Club, was that it?
Yeah, the Cleveland County Republican Club.
Yeah, Cleveland. What was their response to you? Were you somewhat disenfranchised, like Ron Paul was disenfranchised by the Republican Party?
No, sir. I've been very well received at every social networking group I've spoken to. It's kind of funny. We just got through giving an entire round of talks at all the different conventions in the 4th District. We missed a couple of the county conventions, but we tried to make as many of them as we can. When we first went in there, I would say that we had something like a response like what you're kind of alluding to.
Right.
Where these constitutional conservatives in the past have kind of been put in at arm's length. That's exactly how we were treated when we first got there. Like when I was handing out literature, saying hello to people, letting them know that I was going to be speaking that day. Clearly they have an incumbent Republican, and while they may be mad at him for the bailout vote, nobody's really articulated to them why he needs to be replaced or something
right.
along those lines. So, yes, when we first got there, but when I got up to give my speech and I explained how socialism is slavery and how evil that is, and I gave my speech and I talked about how critical a moment we're in and what we need to do to save our republic. When I got through with that speech, it was exact reversal. Even people that had been kind of standoffish that I met prior to speaking to them were coming up to me saying, RJ, you are saying stuff to us that got us into the Republican Party in the first place,
right?
And we haven't heard for decades, because all they ever hear at their conventions is politicians coming along, slapping people on the back, talking about how happy they are they took the state house and the state senate, but nothing of any real substance.
Right. Tom Cole, is he a very popular congressman in that district?
I'm finding that to be a mixed answer.
Okay. Well, that's good for you.
Definitely.
Yeah. Now, is the Republican Party itself giving you sort of the Republican Cole shoulder? Or are they embracing you equally as they're embracing Tom Cole?
No, we are not receiving any official help from the Republican Party. They, now, I will say this. Their county chairman has allowed me to speak.
Right.
At the county conventions, and I appreciate that. And they, you know, they make sure that they recognize me as a candidate whenever I go to certain official events.
Okay, you haven't been excluded from anything, have you?
Well, you could say that we have not officially been excluded from anything except for you know, the traditional support that you would expect to come from being a member of a party is not there. Yes, we're presented,
right,
and we're allowed to speak.
Yeah.
But I've had numerous attempts out there to have my candidacy be put up on the GOP, the state GOP website, and it has still not been put up.
You're kidding. Now, what's their logic about that? I mean, you are a legitimate candidate for office. Why does not your name appear on the Republican website? It delegitimizes your entire campaign, as far as from the hardcore Republicans who use the website, at least, you know, concerned.
They have not given me a reasonable excuse for that. I have asked many times to have my profile and my URL for my web address placed up there. They have a link on their main page for announced candidates. Of course, they already have Mary Fallon up there. They have others up there. I've been an announced candidate since January 3rd. I cannot get into Voter Vault either.
Jeez.
I'm supposed to be able to use Voter Vault to be able to contact Republican voters throughout the district. They won't. I've asked several times. So on the surface, on the face of things, they're, you know, the Republican Party tries to act like they're.
Do you make that an issue? Is that an issue? When you get up and speak and say, you probably never heard of me, and then one of the reasons why is because the Republican Party itself, you know, refuses to recognize me as a legitimate candidate. Why? I don't know. I mean, maybe not in those words, but do you address that as an issue? Like when you spoke with the Cleveland Republican parties?
We haven't made that a central issue yet. What we do is we use the time that we have to get up there and present the message.
Right.
Because, as I said, the responses, once I've spoken, have been just great. Amazing, over the top, couldn't be better. And so once I've actually been able to say what I had to say, and a lot of times my time is limited, the time that I'm given to speak is limited, and so therefore I don't want to waste a lot of that time on sour apples.
Okay, all right. I agree. I mean, it just gets under my skin because that's the experience that I had. And but I was running as a libertarian. It was even worse. I even had the League of Women Voters shunt me, and that really got me. I never sued anyone in my life. I wanted to sue the League of Women Voters. I figured if anyone, any organization, would want to make sure everyone is represented, it would be them, and they were just in bed with everybody else, like, you know, all the other political organizations are, and it just drove me nuts. Another story, but okay.
But of course, one of the after effects of this is we're fully aware, especially in the wake of the Republican Party convention this past yesterday, where you know, folks. We're all excited about having gone to the Tea Parties, and they talked about how they had, you know, raised their hands and shouted to vote them out. But I don't think they're understanding that all but one of the representatives in our state are Republicans. So when that crowd is shouting to vote them out, they're talking about Republican incumbents. And so what we need to be focused on is, you know, the Republican Party needs to be presenting an answer to that vote them out problem. They need to be presenting primary candidates that are constitutional conservatives. Otherwise, they're going to be looking at a protest vote in 2010, losing a lot of their Republican seats at the federal congressional delegation just on protest.
Right.
And so, you know, one of the consequences of, you know, having you know, the audacity to be a Republican and challenge a Republican incumbent is, we're obviously not going to get any funding through the official Republican Party.
RJ, we have a caller coming.
Any monetary help, that's all going to have to come from the people, because the other thing we've committed to is not soliciting any donations from lobbyists. So that's another consequence.
Okay. John, just one second, RJ. I'm going to stumble on your words and interrupt you because we have a caller on line two.
Okay.
Caller, line two, area code 918. Your name, please, and where you're calling from?
Jim from Tulsa.
Jim, yes. Good evening. Jim, you have a question or a comment for our guest?
Yes, I do. RJ, first of all, it's so refreshing and encouraging to hear your message. I got to meet you at the Embassy Suite event last month in Tulsa for the regarding the state sovereignty, and I got one of your flyers, so I know how to contact you. But I'm curious to know if there are many other, as you describe, Ron Paul Republicans or constitutionalist, libertarian-minded candidates. If there's any hope for this country, we're going to need a lot of good people like you running and winning. Winning these elections. So, what do you know about others again in the state or the nation? Is it taking off? And what can we expect?
Well, I can tell you, Jim, and I remember you from the Sovereignty Assembly. I appreciate your presence there. But in answer to your question, we are actively, and when I say we, I mean we the people, not the party. I'm talking about we, just the grassroots people, people like, you know, Sandy Krosno up in Tulsa and Cheryl Williams, in Oklahoma City, myself, a whole bunch of other grassroots organizers, Chad Williams, the 912 meetup, the 912, the Moore Norman 912 organizer. We're out there.
Good.
Actively, because I'm glad you asked this question. This is the exact follow-up that I wanted. Success is not R.J. Harris taking back the 4th District for the people of Oklahoma and taking it away from a socialist bailout voter, okay? No, that's not victory. Victory is taking back our Congress. We have got to take back our Congress, populate it with Constitution conservatives who will put a stop to this stuff. And so yes, we are out there. We're looking for candidates. We've got some other ones identified. There is a we are tentatively planning a response to the Tea Party, a positive candidate rally response, and it's tentatively scheduled right now for May the 23rd. The 912ers are the ones that are talking about it. They're trying to work with Mark Shannon up in Oklahoma City on the who did such a great job getting the word out for the Tea Party, so that way we can get some candidates in here and get them some grassroots support, because as you know, they're not going to get it from the established parties, even if they're like me, actually from one of the established parties. We're not going to get our help from there. Yeah, those folks have a lot of power to lose, and unfortunately, they're not seeing that the way that they save their party is by saving the republic. Yeah, if they would step forward and disavow these bailout voters and run new candidates against them and show the Tea Party people, show the 912ers, show all these new activists that are waking up that they're committed to changing their party back to what it was supposed to be and support candidates like me, they would be able to step forward back into a leadership role and be trusted to do that. We're out there trying to do it.
Thank you. Your answer sheds a lot of light on the subject. Real quick follow-up, what do you talk about the concerns or accusations of a lot of the participants of the Tea Party that are some of the neocons and diehard big government Republicans that see the popularity of it and are doing it for political gain, versus the old diehard libertarian Ron Paul Republicans that started the movement a few years ago?
I would say this. What I have seen from the Tea Party organizer in Oklahoma City, Alan Webb, is nothing but the highest caliber of virtue and principle. He made it clear that the rally that he was going to put on would be nonpartisan, and it would not favor one political candidate group over another, and he stuck to his guns on that. I can vouch for that. I saw him do it, and he did it.
Right. I don't know, RJ, were you at La Fortune to hear Sullivan get booed?
Yeah, I did. We did not have any in Oklahoma City that even attempted to speak, so none of them got booed. But I did see that online, some of the videos. Yes.
Rightfully so.
But now I will say this: I cannot speak for the Tea Party movement nationally. I can just speak for it here. The main organizer here, Alan Webb, has been as good as his word. And I absolutely thank him for that, because this needs to be an effort where the people can come together and be heard and not be preached at by a bunch of people that are going to claim to be constitutional conservatives when they're the very ones that voted for the stuff that caused all this in the first place.
Right, and lastly, RJ, you mentioned that 912 group. I've heard just a little about it, but haven't gone to the website or checked into it. They certainly are national scope, I guess, as a brainchild of Glenn Beck. So, anyways, I like I said, I hope we can, all the different fractions can truly understand the Constitution and unite and continue to fight the good fight.
Well, I would say this. I would say this to all the Ron Paul Republicans out there, and all the both the big L and libertarians and the little L libertarians in the Republican Party, however you want to label them. I would say this to all those people that have been fighting this good fight for decades. It's kind of hard to have done all this work and then see somebody else jump in and not know what they're doing and have all the success. But let's not be treated. Let us not treat these people the way we were treated by the Republican Party when we first came in. Okay?
Right.
We need to do the opposite. Yes, you know, Glenn Beck, a lot of people have talked about whether or not he's sincere, whether or not he's not sincere. I personally think that we are watching him wake up the same way we did last year and the years past. So I'm going to respect that. And I think that what we need to do is open up our arms and our rhetoric and include this mass of conservatives that are waking up and help direct them, help educate them, be fair with them, and not shove them away. That's exactly the opposite of what the Republican Party did last year when all of these grassroots Republicans wanted to come into their party and they tried to chase them away, and we should not make that mistake.
I agree. So true. I appreciate you answering my questions. Best of luck to you and your campaign.
Thank you,
Jim. What is the response that you receive, RJ, when you talk about Oklahoma sovereignty? The general thought of the average citizen is that the federal government has jurisdiction over the states, and they little realize that the states are sovereign and the federal government exists by grace of the state. It's the exact opposite. What kind of response do you get to that?
From a less informed perspective, you know, it ranges from just flat out, you know, ignorance on the issue to maybe a jovial, you know, what do you guys want to secede or something? But then as you move up the scale, we've been helped with the educational process of that particular issue by Charles Key. Just an amazing constitutional conservative up at the state legislature, the Oklahoma State Legislature. This is the second year in a row he's been pushing for his 10th Amendment resolution, and it's doing very well, making its way through the legislature. And so I think because of that, we've had a little bit easier go of explaining what we mean by Oklahoma sovereignty. And whenever I do run into folks that kind of cock their head or, hey, what are you talking about there, And I keep my Constitution with me everywhere I go, so I just pull it out and I read the 10th Amendment and I say, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about power reserved to the states and to the people that is not specifically enumerated in the Constitution.
And I'll bet that's the first time they've heard that for the older people in 55 years.
Yeah, a lot of times it is the first time they've heard it.
Right.
And I try to, you know, I try to take the opportunity to, in a very friendly way, explain to them that, you know, that our states are supposed to be by and large running themselves and not the other way around.
You know, I'm sorry.
Well, unless somebody's being purposely obtuse.
I is something interesting. I had someone call and talk about the living constitution, and in other words, it's malleable. We can change. I said, fine. I said, let me do this. I said, let's not talk about the Constitution. So I got my little constitutional book out, and I said, let me read the first couple of paragraphs, and you tell me which part of it you would change and which part is malleable. And I just read the first couple of paragraphs. He said, I wouldn't change anything. I said, so Do you know what you're talking about? Obviously, they didn't know what they were talking about, and that's a real problem. Let me ask you this. What about is the current president, Barack Obama, is he helpful in your campaign, or is he a hindrance? Do you find that there's a lot of resistance because of the Obama staticness, or whatever you want to call it, the aura of Barack Obama and his wonder and how, you know, the second coming, so to speak? Is that a help or a hindrance to you, do you think?
No, I would say it has not been a hindrance, in other words. His position on a lot of these issues is helping us.
Okay.
Mainly because he's so far off the mark.
Right.
Mainly because, you know, things that he is doing or espousing are so far off of the Constitution, even for a whole population base that hasn't even read the thing. Maybe they're familiar with it. It's so far off of even that it's actually helping us because people aren't happy. They're very upset with what they're seeing from him. And so, you know, that might not be the case necessarily in another state or another part of the region where he has a stronghold. But he didn't have a stronghold here in Oklahoma.
That's right. That's true. This was probably the most anti-Obama state in the union. Let me ask you this. And what are your expectations as to what percent of the Republican vote that you can garner from this campaign? I know you want to win. I know what the hopes are, and I know what the aspirations are. What do you think you can get being a first-time candidate?
What I think we can do, especially given the climate of the awaking electorate, of the awaking public to these issues, I fully expect not only that we can get R.J. Harris elected in the 4th District, but that in the next two election cycles, we can take back our Congress. We can take it back from the bailout voters, and we can vote out of office every single one of them.
I do honestly believe
that
you can do it. You think you can do it then, right, R.J.?
Yes.
Okay, good. R.J., we have about a minute and a half to go, and then we get turned off. And so I want to give this minute and a half to you to tell our listeners whatever you want to tell them about how to reach you, what to do, or whatever, okay? And go at it.
Okay. Well, they can reach me at rjharris2010.com. We answer all of our emails. My campaign manager's phone number is on that website. As I said earlier, we're not going to get any help from the establishment. So if folks want to see this campaign move forward and us to be able to find additional candidates, we'd love to get some financial help from the people, because we have made a commitment. We have made a commitment that we will not solicit any type of campaign donations from lobbyists, and that I will not participate in the Congressional Pension Plan because I believe it's theft. So folks need to hear that. They need to know that. They need to know that if we're going to actually win and take our Congress back, we have got to support these candidates that step forward, so that way their loyalty belongs to us, we the people, and not the corporate interests, not the parties either, and not the lobbyists.
Very good. All right, so, RJ, we're going to be going off the air very soon. I'd like to personally thank you for being our guest. You're very articulate. You do have a supporter at this station, and we will continue to do so. We wish you all the luck in the world, and you know, carry that banner and go with it. It's going to be a tough fight, I know, and I think you know it's going to be a tough fight. We wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you so much, Joe, and thank you to your listeners for hearing me today.
And if you would do me a favor, if you would just send me an email with your with a mailing address and your T-shirt size, I'd love to send you an official Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt.
Will do.
Fine, good. Thank you very much, and good night.
Good night.
Well, that was terrific. He was good. He was good. I'm RJ is all right. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Red Shakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal. The government hates competition." With that, until next time, and that'll be Thursday morning at 6:30 a.m. Central Time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.